Felt it. In my heart, in my soul, in wherever you feel things deepest. This is what I want to do. This is what I have to do. There was a fire in your eyes I'd never seen before. I realized that if I want to make a difference, truly make a difference, like you're trying to do with this show, I'm going to have to leave New York. My camera and I can do more somewhere else. Leave? I echoed. Of everything you said, it was the one word that lodged in my brain, glowing there like a neon emergency room sign. What do you mean? What about us? Your face went blank for a moment, and I realized my response wasn't the one you were expecting. But really, what were you expecting?
I wasn't thinking about us. It's my dream, Lucy, you said, your voice pleading. I've figured out my dream. Can't you be happy for me?
How can I be happy about a dream that doesn't include me? I asked.
It doesn't not include you, he said.
I remembered what you told me a few months before at the park, about your parents. I tried to turn off that neon sign and ignore what the word leave would do to my universe. Ignore the questions you just left unanswered. You figured out your dream, I repeated. Your dream is not disposable. I could see tears gathering on your lashes. I want to make everyone here understand that people all over have the same kinds of dreams, that we're not that different. If I can do that, if I can create a connection.
You shook your head. You couldn't find the words. But I need to take more photographs, sign up for more classes. I need to be the best before I go.
So there was time. We had time. And maybe it would be like you and your mom. You could love me from a distance while you were gone, and then come back when you'd finished an assignment. That didn't seem terrible. That could work.
I grabbed your hand with both of mine.
You will be, I said. If that's what you want, you will be.
We held each other on the couch after that, breathing in each other's air, lost in our own thoughts.
Can I tell you something? I asked.
I felt you nod.
I'm afraid that I'm going to become my mom one day.
You turned to face me. But you love your mom.
You were right. I did. I still do. Did you know that she and my dad met in law school? I asked you. Have I ever mentioned that?
You shook your head. She's a lawyer?
She was, I said, tucking my head under your chin. She worked for the Manhattan DA before Jason and I were born. And then she had Jay and quit. And the whole rest of her life, she's been defined by her relationship to other people. She's Don's wife or Jason and Lucy's mom. That happens to so many women. I don't want it to happen to me.
You looked me right in the eye. That doesn't have to happen to you, Lucy. You're passionate. You know what you want. You work harder than anyone.
Then you kissed me. I kissed you back, but inside I was still thinking that my mother was probably all of those things too, and it didn't matter. She lost herself anyway. I wonder if she wanted to.
13.
Sometimes we make decisions that seem right at the time, but later, looking back, were clearly a mistake. Some decisions are right even in hindsight. Even though everyone told me not to, and even knowing what happened afterward, I'm still glad I moved in with you that snowy day in January.
He told you he wants to leave, Kate said, as we sat on the overstuffed chairs in our breakfast nook, coffee cups on the table in front of us.
But there's no date, I argued with her. He doesn't have a job yet. It could take a long time for him to get one. And even if he gets one, who knows how long it'll last? He could be gone for a little while and then come back.
Kate gave me the look I imagine she now uses on the associates in her law firm. The one that says without words, "Are you listening to yourself? Do you expect anyone to believe that?"
Even if he gets a job next month, I told her. Even if he's gone for years. I want to spend as much time as I can with him before he goes. I mean, the world could end tomorrow. Or I could get hit by a truck and die a week from Thursday. I want to live in the now.
Lou, Kate said. She ran her fingers along the silver beaded Tiffany necklace Tom had given her. She'd taken to wearing it every day. The problem with living in the now is it means, by definition, you're not making plans for the future. And the probability that the world will end tomorrow or you'll be hit by a truck is incredibly slim. The probability that Gabe will find a job as a photojournalist overseas and break your heart in the process is incredibly high. I'm just trying to help you manage your risk here. It's less risky if you stay. It was tedious defending my choice to everyone. I'd had a similar conversation with my mother the night before, and my brother Jason a few days before that. Alexis was on board with my decision, but even I knew that she had the most questionable judgment of all my friends. I'd lost track of the number of men she'd slept with because of her personal "why the hell not" motto.
"The thing is, Kate," I said, "I'm already all in, whether I live with Gabe or not, so I might as well enjoy myself while he's still here."
Kate was silent for a moment, then leaned over and hugged me. "Oh, Lou," she said, "I love you no matter what, but see if you can figure out a way to bubble wrap your heart. I have a bad feeling about this." Kate was, of course, right. But at that point, there was nothing I could have done to change our trajectory. Yours, mine, ours. I stand by that decision. Even now I stand by it. I've never felt as alive as I did those 5 months we lived together. You were life-changing, Gabe. I'm glad we made that choice. Free will, despite our fate. 14. Soon after we moved in together, you signed up for a photography class where your assignment was to capture different feelings or concepts on film. Capture beauty was 1 week. You aced that one, no problem. Then capture sorrow. Happiness and decay and rebirth were definitely in there. I don't remember the order, but I remember you traveling Manhattan with your camera, bundled up in your scarf and hat. Sometimes I tagged along, zipping my coat up to my chin and wearing my warmest earmuffs. A lot of your assignments ended up being pictures of me, like the one you took of me sleeping, my hair dark and tangled against the white pillowcase. It was for Serenity, I think. I still have that picture, framed, wrapped in brown paper in a box under my bed. When I moved in with Darren, I couldn't bring myself to get rid of it. Not even when I married him. Maybe I should unwrap it now. Hang it in my office at last. Would you like that? The assignment you had that day was to capture pain.
"I know where we have to go," you said on that Saturday morning, making sure your camera battery was charged. "Ground zero." I shook my head as I ate the last bite of waffle on my plate. Your mom had sent you a waffle maker, remember? She bought it on a whim when she found it on a clearance rack, and we'd made that pact to use it as much as possible. Do you still have it? Did you keep mementos like I did, objects to remind you of our life together? Or did you outgrow us as you traveled, tossing memories out with match boxes and coffee mugs? I still think about that waffle maker. It was a good waffle maker.
"You can go," I said. "I'm not."
"It's for pain," he said, "for class."
I shook my head again, scraping my fork across the plate to capture the last bit of syrup. "Your class, not mine," I told you.
"I don't understand," you said. "Why don't you want to go?"
I shuddered. I don't need to see it.
"But you do. We need to remember. The people, the ones who died and the ones they left behind, the reasons it happened, all of it. We can't forget."
"I don't need to look at the remains to remember," I said. "That day, it's a part of me. It always will be."
"Then to pay your respects," you said, "like visiting a grave."
I put my fork down. "Do you really think that the only way to pay your respects to something, or someone, is by visiting the site of the event, the place they're buried? You can't mean that." You were upset now, but trying not to show it.
"No," you said, "I don't. But I just feel like we're not doing enough to remember, to understand."
I bit my lip. "Us?" I said.
"Everyone," you answered. Your hands were in fists, thumbs clenched around fingers. "How can people walk around like everything's normal when America's at war in Iraq? When bombs are going off in hotels in Indonesia? When they were here in New York and saw what happened? How come they don't feel it like I do? Why don't they want to do more?"
Your voice cracked on the last word, and I could see you struggling so hard to keep your emotions in check. You were right, though. Most people didn't feel it like you did. I didn't. At least not all the time, not every minute. It didn't engulf my mind or capture my heart the way it did yours. Maybe they don't need to force themselves to feel pain to know it's there. Just because they're not doing it your way doesn't mean they're not doing it at all. And not wanting to go to ground zero doesn't mean I don't care. I didn't wait for your response. I walked toward the kitchen, bringing the dishes, sticky with maple syrup, with me. The plates were yours, the forks mine. The kitchen was a jumble of us. I turned on the sink and started washing the dishes, not able to stop the tears that overflowed onto my cheeks. I knew then, really knew in my heart, that you would leave me one day soon. This dream you had wasn't a someday dream. It was a right now dream.
You would never be happy in New York. You would never be happy with just me. You needed to confront your disappointment in the world to work through it if you were going to end up okay. Even then, I understood that. I just hoped you'd come back. You walked over so quietly, I didn't notice you until I heard your camera click. I looked up and you captured me with my eyes full of tears, the instant one started to slip down my cheek.
Gabe!
I said, wiping my eyes with my forearm. I couldn't believe you were taking my picture then, that you were turning our argument into art.
I know, you said, putting your camera on the counter.
You kissed the top of my head, then my eyelids, then my nose, and finally my lips.
I'm sorry. And I know you care. I love you, Lucy.
I put the plates down and wrapped my sudsy hands around your t-shirt. You too, Gabe, I said. I love you too. You went to Ground Zero that day without me, and took dozens and dozens of pictures. Because I knew how much it meant to you, I agreed to look through them and help you choose the best shot, even though I kept thinking I smelled that acrid, charred air that floated uptown on September 12th. But in the end, you didn't choose any of them. The picture you handed in for pain was the one of me, washing dishes with tears in my eyes. I never liked that picture. How would you like it if I took a picture of you now? 15. After that story about you and your mom and your birthday kaleidoscope, I understood your desire for grand gestures, for thoughtful, heartfelt celebration. And I matched it. That year we went on a helicopter ride for your birthday at the end of February, and then ate the 20-course tasting menu at that restaurant next to Parm. I'm blank now on the name, but you know the place. The one where after about 11 of the courses, I was so full that you ate a couple of mine, so you ended up with 22 courses and I ended up with 18, which was still too many for me. I felt like a snake who'd eaten an alligator for the whole rest of the weekend, but you were happy. You said that your birthday had been properly celebrated, especially after I went down on you during the taxi ride home. And the day before my birthday that year, you sent me flowers at work, a dozen stargazer lilies. I still have the note that came with them, hidden away with the wrapped-up photograph of Serenity. Stargazers for my girl filled with starlight. Happy birthday, happy anniversary. Can't wait until tonight. Love you, Gabe. When I got home, there was a big box on the bed. Open it, he said, a huge grin taking over your face. Inside was an outfit from my favorite store back then, BCBG. The one that I shopped in only when they were having their 70% off sales. The top was turquoise silk, sleeveless, with a deep V in the front and in the back. And the skirt was short and tight and black. I thought this would look great on you, he said. It's perfect for seeing Apollo at the ballet, and then I thought, we could go back to faces and names? You'll be the sexiest girl in the room. I threw my arms around you in a thank you hug. Your gift was so thoughtful, tailored just for me. I pictured you combing through Time Out New York for the perfect night out, walking into BCBG feeling slightly out of place, touching silk and satin and imagining it on my body, choosing a color that would make me glow. I'm so lucky, I said, really and truly the luckiest girl in the world to be with you. I think you've got it backward, you said. I'm the lucky one. I wish I could do more to show you how incredible it is to be here, right now, with you. Well, I said, grabbing your belt and tugging you toward me. I might be able to come up with some things you could do. We didn't even make it to the bed that day, and we had the rug burns to prove it. Lying next to each other, our clothing strewn across the floor, you said, "Did you ever imagine that loving someone would feel like this?" I snuggled closer to you, your arm tightened around my shoulder. "Never in my wildest dreams," I said. "It's like you're my star, Lucy, my sun. Your light, your gravitational pull. I don't even know how to say what you mean to me." "I'd call us a binary star," I said, slowly running my fingers up your thigh. I couldn't keep my hands off you. No self-control. "We're orbiting around each other." "God, Lucy," he said, "your mind is as beautiful as your body." You propped your head up on your elbow and faced me. "Do you believe in karma?" you asked. "Like Hindu karma? Or like, if I steal someone's taxicab, I'll be cursed to suffer the same fate?" I asked back. He smiled. "There's definitely cab karma in this city, but it's not quite what I'm talking about. It's not Hindu karma either. I guess it's not really karma at all. It's more like, do you think we get to love each other like this so much, so strongly, because my dad was an asshole? Is it my reward for living through that? Getting this? You gestured at both of our naked bodies. Or does having this now mean that I'll suffer later to make up for it? Do we all get a finite amount of goodness in this world? I sat up then and shook my head. I don't think the world works that way, I said. I think life is just life. We're put in situations and we make choices, and that's why things happen the way they do. Taking the current when it serves. It's that old question, the one from Kramer's class. You were quiet. But you know what I'd like to think? I continued to fill the silence. I'd like to think that it is karma, Hindu karma. That maybe in a past life I did something wonderful for someone, and my reward is you in this life. I like that kind of karma better than your idea of a finite amount of goodness. You smiled again, but this time it was rueful. I could tell you didn't believe me. I like that idea too, you said. I worry that it's impossible to have it all, for all parts of a life to be wonderful. I thought about it. I think they can be, I said. Maybe not everything all at once, but I think people can end their lives having gotten all that they wanted out of it. And I do believe that, Gabe. I still do.
I hope you're right, you said.
We never talked about it after that, but I got the feeling you still thought that no one person could ever have everything. I wish I could have figured out a way to shift your perspective on that. Because what I think you were saying, what you believed, is that you have to sacrifice. This love for that love, this piece of happiness for that one. It was a theory that shaped your decisions, whether consciously or unconsciously. It was part of what pointed you down the road you traveled, what brought us here. But I really would like to think that's not the case, that you can have a father who loves you and a girlfriend who does the same, a career that's rewarding and a personal life that is too. But maybe you'd say that if you have those things, maybe it's your health that will go, or your finances, or God knows what else. Did you ever change your mind, Gabe? I wish you could answer me. 16. Soon after my birthday, you signed up for that class with Pete. I always wondered how long you kept in touch with him after you left New York. I know he meant a lot to you, clearly. He's the one who jump-started your career. I always wondered if, in him, you'd finally found the support and guidance you'd always wanted from your father. You were the happiest I'd seen you while you were taking his class, selling photographs with his help to the Village Voice. It made me think briefly that maybe I was wrong. Maybe you were wrong. Maybe you could be happy staying in New York. You'd taken on dinner responsibilities, too, because I'd made it a point to stay at the office until Phil left, and he was working later and later then, trying to come up with a new season's worth of ideas for It Takes a Galaxy. Do you remember the night I came home, even later than usual, close to 9, and you'd made pasta with homemade pesto sauce? There was a bottle of wine open, and you'd already had a glass. When I walked in, you were setting the table. Ella Fitzgerald was playing through the speakers attached to your laptop. Well, hello, you said. Your kiss tasted like Malbec. You're in a good mood tonight, I answered, shrugging off my denim jacket. Guess who's going to have his photograph printed in the New York Times, you asked. I gasped. You? Me, you said, giddy. Pete connected me with the right people over there, and they're printing the one I took down our block when the water pipe burst in the middle of the street. It's for a feature article on the crumbling city infrastructure. I dropped my bags on the floor and threw my arms around you. Congratulations to my talented, brilliant boyfriend. As you lifted me up off the ground and lowered me onto the couch, I thought that maybe, just maybe, this could work long term. Maybe you wouldn't leave after all. We ate dinner that night half-dressed, and afterward I shared some news of my own. Phil had asked me to come up with some ideas for next season's shows. This is it, I told you. My chance to really influence what kids in our country see and learn and understand. You sat up with me late that night as I brainstormed ideas in bed, acting as my incredibly supportive sounding board. But I wasn't happy with my list. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw your camera. Hey, I said. Any ideas in there? What's on your memory card? You brought your camera into bed with us, and we clicked through your photos one by one until I made you stop at a little girl in the window of a first-floor apartment, her hands gripping the window bars.
What's her story, do you think? I asked.
Loneliness, he said.
Parents who left her while they went to work? A dreamer who's yearning for something else.
Dreams. We should do an episode on dreams.
It was episode one of our second season, and I got promoted at the start of the next quarter. But you were gone before both of those things happened.
17.
Not long after your photograph was in the Times, It Takes a Galaxy was nominated for a daytime Emmy, and I was invited to the ceremony with a date. I dragged you to Bloomingdale's with me when I tried on gowns, though I guess dragged isn't really the right word because you enjoyed it. Do you remember? You sat on a couch near the dressing rooms, an audience of one for a private fashion show. I came out in a strapless lace sheath first, with a slit up the front of my right leg.
Sexy, you said. Really hot.
Not quite what I'm going for, at least not for work. Then I came out in a pink ball gown.
Sweet, you told me, like Cinderella.
That wasn't right either. I put on a navy blue dress, all angles and corners.
Severe, you said. Beautiful and sharp.
I could see the other women in the store noticing us. The older ones smiled indulgently. Some of the younger ones looked jealous. When I saw their stares, I tried to tone down my smile, tamp down the feeling inside me that said, all's right in the world. That day, happiness felt like our destiny, yours and mine together. I tried on a few more dresses until I got to a red silk dress, halter with a low back, tight on the top and then looser on the bottom, so it swayed when I moved. Do you remember what you said?
I do.
I can see you saying it right now, your eyes smoldering as they traveled the length of my body.
That, you said, is stunning. You are stunning.
You stood up from the couch and took my hand, twirling me in the middle of the Bloomingdale's formal wear section. Then you dipped me and kissed me.
This one, you whispered as you righted us.
And buy it as quickly as possible. Is there a bathroom we can sneak into around here, or should we just take a cab home? I laughed and whispered back, cab, as you helped me undo the zipper. 18. When we got home that day, you gathered me and my bags into your arms and raced up the two flights to our apartment, fumbling one-handed for your key while I hung on to your neck, laughing.
What are you doing? I asked. You're nuts.
I couldn't wait any longer, you said, pushing the door open and tossing me onto the bed. You threw my bags on the couch and then came back, already pulling your shirt over your head.
Seeing you in those gowns, knowing you were naked in that dressing room, excruciating.
I pulled off my t-shirt too and unhooked my bra. When I slipped it over my shoulders, you moaned.
Luce, you said. Lucy.
And then you climbed onto the bed with me and your lips and fingers were everywhere and I was moaning too, my back arching. And then you were inside me and I felt complete. Like I always did the moment you slid into me. Gabriel, I said between breaths, you make me feel infinite. You bent your head down and kissed me hard.
You make me feel invincible, you whispered.
Love does that. It makes you feel infinite and invincible, like the whole world is open to you, anything is achievable, and each day will be filled with wonder. Maybe it's the act of opening yourself up, letting someone else in. Or maybe it's the act of caring so deeply about another person that it expands your heart. I've heard so many people say some version of, I never knew how much I could love another human being until... And after the until is usually something like, my niece was born, or I gave birth to a child, or I adopted a baby. I never knew how much I could love another human being until I met you, Gabe. I'll never forget that. 19. I think I glowed that day. I loved a man who loved me back just as fiercely. Who helped me pick out a dress for an award ceremony that would celebrate my accomplishments. I forgot about the fact that you wanted to leave, the fact that underneath the patina of joy, I knew you weren't truly happy. Because that day, everything seemed perfect. 20. The morning of the ceremony, I had my hair blown loose and wavy. I had my makeup done, too, with tons of eyeliner and mascara and red lipstick that almost matched my dress. When I slipped on the silk sheath, I felt enchanting and excited. and like everything I'd been working for since college had truly been worth it. Brains and beauty, you said with a half smile when you saw me. You're not so bad yourself, I responded. You were in a single-breasted tuxedo with a vest and a tie, your curls tamed with some kind of gel that you used only on important occasions. It made you smell like you just left a hair salon. Sometimes I'll walk by someone and catch that same scent, and it'll throw me back to that day, even now. Has that ever happened to you? Have you ever been rocketed back in time by a scent that made you think of me? As we made our way to Rockefeller Center that day, as we met up with my colleagues and took our seats, I could tell that your mind was elsewhere. You kept clapping a second after everyone else. You kept looking at me with your bottom lip between your teeth, the face you made when you were thinking about something hard, turning it over and over in your mind. What exactly was going through your head then? And then our award was up and we won. I could barely breathe. The air was filled with joy. I imagined my parents watching, both of them crying, my dad pretending he wasn't. I imagined Jason whooping, Kate cheering. Phil pulled me up on stage with him and the rest of the team, and I got to stand next to him while he spoke. My smile was so wide I could feel my cheek stretch. I kept looking right at you in the audience, wanting you to share my happiness, but your eyes were glazed over. You weren't even looking back. For a moment, I wondered what was going on, but then we were all turning and walking off the stage, and when I got back to my seat, right next to yours, you kissed me softly. I love you, you whispered. We all partied afterward, high on the rush of the adrenaline that comes from winning. We danced and drank and laughed, and you made small talk with my colleagues' wives and boyfriends and fiancés. But the whole time, I could tell you weren't really there. 21. When we got home, I slipped off my heels and collapsed onto the couch. You sat down next to me and took my foot in your hands, massaging away the pain of 8 hours in stilettos. Oh, God, I moaned. Gabe, this may be better than sex. You didn't laugh, though, the way I was expecting you to. Luce, you said, your fingers still kneading the arch of my left foot. We have to talk. I sat up and pulled my feet from your hands, tucked them under me. What is it? I asked. Are you okay? Or are we okay? I thought things were great, but if there's anything... Lucy, you said. My whole name. Stop. Then you took a deep breath. I don't know how to say this, so I'm just gonna say it straight out. I got offered a job with the Associated Press. They want me to go to Iraq, embed with troops there for a feature piece to start, with the possibility of a salaried position after that. Pete made a few calls, pulled a few strings. He knew I wanted to go abroad. For a moment, I couldn't breathe. When? I whispered. For how long? They want me to leave in 3 weeks. The job is for 2 months at least, maybe a lot longer. When do you have to give them an answer? I asked. I was thinking we could handle 2 months, maybe even longer. We could make it work. I already gave it, you said, looking down at your fingers. I told them yes. You what? I asked. I felt like someone had pulled the plug in a bathtub drain, like our life together was rushing away in a twirling tornado. My mind flashed to Kate, to what she said about the probability of you leaving and breaking my heart. You still weren't looking at me. It's been in the works for a while, you said, but today all the paperwork went through. I didn't know if it would. It seemed so tenuous. I didn't want to say anything unless it was definite. I didn't want to hurt you if I didn't have to. I felt every beat of my heart, every pulse of blood as it moved through my body. I opened my mouth, but I couldn't, for the life of me, figure out what to say. A few months ago, when I saw that first article on Abu Ghraib that the AP put out, I just knew I had to go. Images can shift perspectives. They can change opinions and minds. I can't stand back and trust that other people will do this work, not when I think it's so important. I told you I was going to leave, Luce. You knew that was my plan eventually. And I did, but I don't think I understood you meant forever, that it wasn't negotiable, that we wouldn't work to figure it out together. And even more than that, I wasn't prepared. On that night especially, it was supposed to be a night of celebration, of happiness, of success. I was flying higher than I ever had in my life. The work I'd done had won an Emmy, and I'd let down my guard. I'd allowed myself to be completely happy. How could you not have told me what Pete was trying to do? The phone calls you must have had, the plans you must have been making. How could you have made that decision without me? It still makes me angry, Gabe, that you didn't include me. We were a binary star. We orbited around each other. When you decided not to tell me, you changed that. You weren't orbiting around me anymore. You were circling someone else, something else. As soon as you started keeping secrets, we had no chance. All at once, tears rushed to my eyes, tears of anger and sadness and confusion and hurt. Gabe, Gabe, I said over and over, how could you? I finally managed. How could you not tell me? How could you tell me tonight? You reached out to me and I fought you, pushing your arms away with more strength than I thought I had. It would have hurt less if I'd known, I said, if we'd talked about it. Don't you understand? We were a team. You cut me out. How could you make plans without me? How could you make plans like that without me? You were crying too, snot dripping from your nose to your lip. I'm sorry, you said. I was trying to do the right thing. I didn't want to hurt you. I'm sorry. But you did, I choked out. More than you would have, more than you needed to. It's like I don't matter to you at all. It's not true. You wiped your nose and then reached for me again. Don't, I said. Don't touch me. Please, you said. Lucy, please. Now you were crying harder than I was. I need you to understand. I wish I didn't want this. I wish I didn't feel like this is the thing I have to do. The only way I'll feel whole. I never wanted to hurt you. This isn't about you. No, I said. It's not about me. But it's not only about you either. It's about us. It's about you destroying us. You looked as if I'd slapped you, and I wanted to. I'm not, you said. It's not about us, Lucy. It's really not. It is about me. I need to do this for me. There's something inside me that's broken, and this is the only thing that will fix it. I thought you'd understand. You always under... But I didn't understand this time. Why can't you stay? I interrupted. What about photographing New York City? There are so many stories here to tell. You were so happy when the New York Times printed your picture. You shook your head. I can do more somewhere else. I can do better work. I can make more of a difference. I wish it weren't true, but it is. You know what that means to me. I do, but there has to be another way. There isn't, you said. What about taking trips but coming back home when they're done? I was begging. I knew it, and I didn't care. That's not how it works, you said. Pete said if I want to do this, I have to be all in. Oh, Pete says. I was furious now. So you talked to Pete all about this, but not to me. Lucy, you started. You know what? I said, fuck you. Anger spread to the far reaches of my fingers and toes. I walked to our bed and threw your pillow and the extra blanket onto the couch. You're sleeping there tonight. Lucy, we're not done talking. The blanket dangled from your fingertips. We are, I said, unzipping my dress and turning out the light. Of course, neither one of us slept. I relived the conversation we just had over and over in my mind. As much as I hated you just then, I still wanted to walk across the studio and slide in next to you on the couch, to feel the solidity of your body next to mine. You were my comfort and my pain all at once. At some point later, you got up and stood beside the bed. I have an idea, you said. I didn't respond. I know you're awake, you said. I can see your eyes. We hadn't closed the blinds. You were backlit, illuminated by the city lights. It gave you a halo. Fallen angel, I thought. What? I finally asked. Maybe you can come with me. You reached out your hand tentatively in the semi-darkness. Maybe we could figure that out. I met your fingers with mine. For a brief moment, it made sense. But then my mind focused on what you were asking. It focused on Baghdad, on visas, on apartments, on jobs. But how? I asked. You sat down on the bed, still holding my hand, and shrugged. We could find a way. But where would I live? What would I do? What about my career, Gabe? I felt the anger flooding my body again. You were asking me to give up my dreams for you, when you would never do the same for me, wouldn't even consider compromise, hadn't even talked to me about it. You shook your head. I don't know, you said, but I'm sure people do this. Maybe you could have a different career. You could get a job writing articles and make a difference that way. We could create the words and the pictures together. I should have thought of this earlier. It'd be perfect. I thought my dreams weren't disposable, Gabe, I said. I loved you. I did. I do. So much. But what you were asking wasn't fair. And it hurt then. It still hurts now. That you'd made this decision to leave without my input and weren't willing to think about any alternatives.
That's not what I meant, you said.
I sighed. It was all too much. Let's talk about it in the morning, I told you. But, you started. Then you closed your mouth.
Okay, you said.
But you didn't move. You stayed put, sitting on the bed. You kept your hand on mine.
Gabe?
I asked. You turned to face me. A police car sped by, its flashing lights reflected in your eyes.
I can't sleep without you, Lucy.
I felt my tears pool again. That's not fair, I said. You don't get to say that. You have no right.
But it's true, you said. That's why you should come to Iraq.
Because you're having trouble sleeping without me next to you in bed?
I pulled my hand out of yours. I didn't mean it literally, you said. I meant I love you. I meant I'm sorry. I meant I want you to come with me.
You didn't get it. I sat up and turned on the bedside lamp. We both squinted in its harsh light. I saw the pain etched onto your face. You looked raw and vulnerable, miserable, lost. Like you did that night at Faces and Names, the night we reconnected. And there it was, my pomegranate seed. The part of you that still makes it so hard for me to turn away. When you show me that vulnerable piece of yourself, it makes me feel responsible. Because we only reveal our true selves to the people we care about most. I think that's why our relationship jump-started so quickly. We had no barriers on September 11th. We revealed our secret selves to each other right away. And you can't ever take that back. But that night, it wasn't enough. I needed more from you. I needed understanding and honesty and compromise. I needed commitment. It wasn't even worth fighting anymore. I reached for your hand. I love you too, I said. But I can't come with you, you know that. Your dreams are there, but mine are here.
You were right before, you said, your voice sounding strangled. Let's talk about it in the morning.
I watched you pad across the apartment, fold your long body onto the couch. I turned out the light and thought of all the reasons it made no sense for me to go with you to Iraq. And the one reason it did. Because I couldn't imagine my life without you. When I woke up, bleary-eyed, with a pounding headache, you were sitting on the couch watching me. I know you can't come, you said quietly, the moment my eyes were open. But I promise we'll stay in touch. I'll see you when I come to visit the city. I'll always love you. Your voice caught in your throat. But I need to do this. And the fact that I was ready to throw away your dream, I'm my father all over again, Lucy. I think you'll be better off without me. My head throbbed, my eyes burned, and I truly fell apart then. I couldn't stop the sobs, the shaking, the sounds coming out of my mouth that seemed prehistoric. Expressions of pain coded into our DNA from our pre-verbal ancestors. You were really leaving. You were really leaving me. I had known this would happen at some point, but I never let myself imagine what it would be like when it did, and it felt like a nightmare. Like my heart was made of blown glass and someone had thrown it to the floor, shattered it into a million pieces, and then ground their heels into the shards. The fact that you invited me to go with you, it meant a lot. It always has. But it wasn't a real offer, not a fully thought-out one. It was a middle-of-the-night apology, an attempt to fix your mistakes and not telling me sooner and keeping secrets, and leaving me out of the process. Though a part of me has always wondered what would have happened if I'd said yes. Would it have changed both of our lives completely? Or would we still have ended up here, with me in this too bright room, wishing I were anywhere else, and wishing at the same time that I never had to leave? I guess we'll never know. You packed up your stuff that week and left to spend time with your mom before you took off for good. And I sat in what used to be our apartment and cried.
22. We never talked about what it was like afterward. I never told you how broken I was, how I looked at the spaces your books left on the bookshelves and couldn't bring myself to fill them, how I couldn't eat waffles without crying, or wear the wooden bracelet you bought me at the street fair on Columbus Avenue, the one we stumbled upon and then stayed at all afternoon, eating mozzarellas and crepes and pretending that we needed a new carpet for our imaginary ski house. One night, 2 weeks after you left,
I took a bottle of your favorite whiskey down from the shelf above the kitchen sink. You'd left it behind, too. I poured myself glass after glass, first over ice and then, when the ice tray was empty, straight. It burned my lips when I drank it, but it tasted like kissing you, and it dulled the pain. For the first time since you left, I slept through the night. I felt like hell the next morning and called in sick to work, but I did it again the next week, and the week after, making myself go to work, learning how to live with the pain. There were stores I couldn't pass and restaurants I couldn't eat in. I spent a month sleeping on the floor because all I felt was your absence when I tried sleeping in our bed, and the couch was worse. It reminded me of the night after the Emmys. I donated half my clothing to Goodwill and threw away the posters we had on the walls. 6 weeks after you left, I sat in the almost empty apartment and called Kate. I can't stay here, I said. You shouldn't, she answered. Come stay with me. So I packed up the rest of the apartment, and I did, for 2 weeks. Kate helped me sublet the studio, and then I moved to Brooklyn. I couldn't take it anymore. I needed a new burrow, a fresh start. And even there, I had to avoid Bubby's, where we went to Kevin and Sarah's wedding, and the Red Hook Lobster Pound, where we went to celebrate July 4th. You were everywhere. We'd only been together for 14 months, but it was 14 months that changed my world. I emailed you, do you remember? I didn't tell you how I was feeling, how I was falling apart. I'm getting a share in the Hamptons with Alexis, totally last minute, but it should be fun, I wrote with false cheer. Just saw Ben Folds play on Summer Stage. You'd have loved the show. How's everything going? And then I waited and waited and waited for a response that never came. I kept thinking about how you said we'd keep in touch, how you said you'd always love me. Every time I checked my email, I'd feel a combination of rage and sadness, disappointment deeper than anything I'd ever experienced before. I started letters to you, diatribes, really. But I threw them all out before I sent them. I was afraid that if I yelled at you across continents, you'd write me off completely, and I'd never hear from you again. I didn't think I'd be able to handle that. Looking back now, I know you were hurting too, trying to move on, find your own path. My note from New York must have felt like it had been beamed in from another planet. Summer Stage? The Hamptons? I can't even imagine what you thought when you read that. But then I couldn't understand how you could ignore me. How 1 minute you could spin me and kiss me and tell me I made you feel invincible, and then all of a sudden you could disappear. 2 months after you left, I got an email from you, the first one since you landed in Iraq. Glad you're doing well. Things here are crazy. Sorry I didn't write sooner. It was a hard adjustment, but I love the work. The feature's done, and they're keeping me on here for a while. Hope you're enjoying New York. I read that email over 100 times, maybe. It could have been 200. I analyzed every word, every punctuation mark. I looked for the hidden meanings, any insight I could glean into how you were feeling or what you were thinking, trying to figure out whether you missed me, whether you'd found someone new. But here's the thing. There was no subtext, no hidden messages, no secret codes. It was just a quick response sent in a hurry. I'd been waiting 2 months for nothing. I created a Gmail folder called Disaster and put all your emails in there, including that one. I didn't write back. I knew I wouldn't be able to bear it if you ignored me again. 23. Sometimes I'm told things that I don't realize are important until much later. That's how it always seemed to be when I talked to my brother. Whenever we have any kind of serious discussion, anything more than the everyday, how are you and how's work? It takes me years to understand what he was trying to tell me. A few weeks after you left, Jason called. He was 28 at the time and had been dating Vanessa for about a year. They'd met at the lab. She was working in communications for the pharmaceutical company, and he was trying to develop some kind of targeted cancer therapy that I still only half understand. Hey, Lulu, he said when I picked up my cell. I wanted to see how you were doing. Mom said things have been pretty rough. Yeah, I said, my eyes already filling with tears at his concern. I miss him so much, Jay. I love him and I hate him and it's awful. My voice wobbled on the phone. I wasn't questioning my decision not to go with you. I felt secure in that.
but I'd been replaying the conversations we had over and over in my head, trying to figure out if there was anything I could have said that would have made you stay, and what it was about me that made you keep secrets. I wondered if you would have acted differently if you were dating someone else. Kate said you probably would have left sooner. I didn't believe her then, but now I wonder if she was right.
Oh, Lou, Jason said, I didn't mean to make you cry. I know we haven't talked about relationships before, but remember when Jocelyn and I broke up for the last time? I don't know if you and I ever talked about Jocelyn, but she was Jay's girlfriend in college and right afterward. They met their sophomore year at Princeton and kept getting together and breaking up over and over for 5 years. Until finally she decided to go to medical school at Stanford, and after a brief attempt at long distance, they broke up for good. I guess their 5 years has nothing on our, how should I calculate it now, 13, 11? I remember, I said to Jay, even though I only half did. I was in college at the time and so wrapped up in my own world that I hadn't really been all that involved in my brothers. The reason I was able to end things for good is that I realized that we were like the gummy bear experiment. Do you remember that one? I think I showed it to you in the lab when you came to visit me at college my freshman year. You put potassium chlorate in a test tube and then add a gummy bear. And these two items that are perfectly fine on their own explode. Every single time. Jocelyn and I were like that experiment. Every time we were together, we would explode. And it was exciting and wonderful in some ways, but who wants to live with constant explosions?
Mm-hmm, I answered, thinking of you and me. We didn't break up and get back together over and over, but our relationship back then did feel exciting and wonderful. We were better together than each of us was on our own.
Anyway, when I met Vanessa, it was different. It was like the old NASA experiment. Do you remember that one? It starts out with three clear solutions, but you mix two together first. So I imagine that I'm those two mixed solutions. And then when you add the third, nothing happens at first. But then the solution turns orange because of the potassium iodate. And then a little while later, it turns color again, this time to black, which you know is my favorite color because it's the one that contains all the pigment there is. And then it stays that way. He stopped. I was silent. I had no clue how to respond. Basically, what I'm saying, Lou, is that the relationship got better the longer it lasted. Instead of that gummy bear explosion, it's a clock reaction. Do you understand what I mean?
I didn't understand then, though I do now. Darren showed me that. Though he'd probably say love is like a fine wine where flavors deepen and change over time. All I said to Jason then was, but I love him so much, Jay.
I know, he said. I love Jocelyn too, I still do. Probably I always will a little bit, but I love Vanessa differently. What I wanted to tell you is that there are lots of ways to love people, and I know that you'll love someone else again. Even if it's not the same, some of it might be better.
I don't want to, I whispered. I wanted to love only you, and I couldn't imagine anything could be better than that.
Jason was quiet for a moment. Maybe it was too soon for me to say that, he said. I'm sorry, I'm not that good at this sort of thing, but maybe what I said will make its way into your neurons and you'll remember it when you need it most.
Yeah, I said, okay, thanks for calling.
I love you, Lucy, like hydrogen loves oxygen, a totally different kind of love, an elemental kind. And when he said that, I laughed through my tears because only my brother could explain love using the periodic table.
24. Alexis dragged me all over that summer, to bars, to concerts, to parties, to movie screenings. We dressed up every night in Brooklyn, Manhattan, Southampton, and with enough martinis, I could forget for a little bit. Kate took me to her parents' place on Cape Cod for a week, leaving Tom back in Manhattan. She pampered me with spa treatments and took me to a salon for a brand new haircut she'd found in a French fashion magazine her sister sent. That's when I cut off my braid and donated my hair. Julia told me she was on Team Lucy and that she'd be there whenever I needed her. We spent a lot of nights together eating macaroni and cheese since you hated it, and watching the most violent action films we could find. My friends were actually pretty amazing, considering how much they hated you at that point. I don't know if Kate or Alexis has ever forgiven you for leaving me. Julia has, but it took her a while to understand what you and I had together. Until your gallery show. My mom sent text messages all day long, and inspirational articles in the mail.
Jason came to visit, treating me to a Brooklyn Cyclones game and hot dogs and an explosion using Diet Coke and Mentos. Practically everyone I knew tried to cheer me up in every way they knew how. And I tried as hard as I could to get over you. But really, the only thing I needed was time. 25. At the end of that summer, about 2 weeks after I got your email and created my disaster folder, I met Darren. Does it bother you that I'm talking about him? I'm sorry if it does, but he's part of our story, too. As much as you might not like it, might not like him, our road wouldn't be the same without Darren. I woke up to make coffee the last weekend of my Hampton share, Labor Day weekend, and he was sleeping on the couch in the middle of our living room. I'd never seen him before, and he certainly hadn't been there when I'd gone to bed. Still, Alexis's friend Sabrina tended to bring groups of people back to the house, and it wasn't a surprise to find them sleeping on couches or chairs or sometimes even on the floor in the living room. I tiptoed around him and headed into the kitchen to make some coffee for the house. After you left, my whole sleep pattern changed. The minute I woke up, no matter how early, no matter how hungover, I got out of bed because lying there without you was an exercise in misery. So coffee had become my job that summer. The house was always full of people, and I tried not to look too much like I just rolled out of bed. That morning, I'd thrown on a bikini. My favorite that summer was a red bandeau, with a pair of cut-off shorts. And I tied a bandana around my hair, letting the side sweat bangs hang over my left eye. I was tan from all those Hamptons weekends, and the bike rides to the beach had toned my body more than I'd expected them to. I liked what I saw when I looked in the mirror that summer. I had to stop myself often from wondering what you'd think if you saw me. If you'd like it, too. By the time the coffee machine started percolating, Darren had woken up. He'd walked into the kitchen and greeted me with the worst attempt at a pickup line I'd ever heard. Or maybe it wasn't even supposed to be a pickup line. He's never admitted one way or the other. Regardless, it was the sort of ridiculous thing that you would never say. "Have I died and gone to caffeine heaven?" he asked. "Because you seem like a coffee angel." It did make me smile, though. His hair was pinned straight, but it was sticking up on one side where it had been crushed against the arm of the couch. And he was wearing boxer briefs and a t-shirt that said, "New Jersey, only the strong survive." I couldn't help but wonder where the rest of his clothing had gone. I handed him the first cup of coffee and he took a sip. "I'm no angel," I told him. "I promise, I'm Lucy." "Darren," he said, holding out his hand. "This coffee is fantastic." "I ground the beans yesterday," I told him. "They're from that new fair trade coffee place in town." He took another sip. "Your boyfriend is one lucky guy," he said, "dating a girl who can make coffee like this." I couldn't help it. Tears pricked my eyes as I said, "No boyfriend." "Really?" he said, drinking more coffee, his eyes finding mine over the rim of the mug. I compared him to you then. His straight hair to your curly, his short, muscular frame to your long, lean one. His brown eyes to your blue. I knew he wanted to flirt, but I couldn't do it. "I'm going to go get my stuff together for the beach," I told him. "If you leave before I come out of my room again, it was nice to meet you." He nodded and lifted his mug. "Thanks for the coffee, Lucy," he said. 26. He left before I came out of my room again. Or, rather, I didn't come out of my room until I heard him and his friend leave. But he must have asked Sabrina about me because I got a Friendster request from him the next day, and a message asking for the name of the Fair Trade Coffee Bean store. We bantered a little through the messages, and he invited me to a coffee and chocolate pairing event he'd read about in Park Slope. It was a Sunday afternoon which somehow felt safe and non-datey, and I had nothing else to do, so I went. It would be a lie to say I didn't think about you at all. In fact, I thought about you a lot. But interspersed, there were moments of fun, of jokes, of coffee almost coming out of Darren's nose because he was laughing so hard at one of the descriptions of the pairings. It was the best time I'd had in months. Well, the best time I'd had in months sober. So when he asked me out for dinner a week later, I said yes. He wasn't you, but he was clever, he was handsome. He made me laugh. He wanted me. And he made me forget about you. At least for a little while. 27. Darren insisted on picking me up at my apartment for our date. He was wearing a suit and his hair was combed back away from his face. I'd worn a summer dress to work that day. It was new, yellow and white seersucker. and I was still wearing it with a pair of sandals, but he seemed much dressier than I was. He must have seen me looking at his suit because he said, "I banker's uniform. I didn't have time to change." I smiled. "You look nice in a suit." As I said it, I realized he did. His shoulders were broader than his waist, and the suit was perfectly tailored to accentuate that fact. I almost offered to change into something fancier, but before I had the chance, he said, "You look nicer in that dress. In fact, I bet if we took a poll of completely objective humans about the niceness factor of our respective outfits, you'd win." I couldn't help but laugh. "Niceness factor of our respective outfits?" I repeated. "That's the technical term," he said. "He wasn't you. He absolutely wasn't you. He was older for one thing, 29. And he was calmer, grounded. Solid, Julia called him. And he was the only one who'd been able to make me laugh since you left. That counted for a lot." When he crooked his elbow and said, "Mademoiselle?" I linked my arm with his and closed my apartment door behind me. I was actually looking forward to dinner with him. 28. After dinner that night, Darren said he would walk me home, that it was the gentlemanly thing to do. He even walked on the street side of the sidewalk, so he would block me in the event that a car came zooming down the street and splashed through a puddle. It would drench him and not me, he explained. "I see," I told him. "What about ladies? What are we supposed to do?" "Nothing you're not already doing," he said, which made me smile again. Then he cleared his throat. "You know, I was a tour guide at Penn and happened to be qualified to give tours of Prospect Heights as well." "Oh, really?" I asked, not quite sure if he was joking. He began talking in an upper-crust accent, like maybe he was someone who had donated a building to a university. I immediately started laughing. He sounded like I imagined the Skirmerhorns or the Havermeyers or the Hartleys did, those families that had buildings named after them on campus. I always wondered about them when we were at school. I pictured them living in huge mansions in some place like Armonk and summering on Martha's Vineyard. Mr. Skirmerhorn wore those red pants that everyone wears on Nantucket and had a permatan and an underbite. And Mrs. Havermeyer never left the house without 3-carat diamonds in each ear. She had 3 children who were raised by 3 different nannies who shaped each of their personalities quite differently. She was oddly obsessed with number 3. And the Hartleys had show dogs. Corgis, like the Queen of England. I guess I could probably find out about them online now if I wanted, but that would ruin the stories I made up in my head. I haven't thought about the stories in years. So Darren turned to me and, in a voice like a Skirmerhorn, said, "That large brownstone is the home of Ashton Cranston Wellington Leeds IV of the Kensington Leedses, the nobler side of the family. Everyone knows the Glasgow Leedses are gamblers and crooks, and horse thieves. They used teaspoons for their soup and dinner forks for dessert. Utter blasphemy. In fact, there's been a movement to hyphenate the family name to Kensington Leeds, you know, for the sake of disambiguation." I laughed so hard at that one, I almost snorted, which made me laugh even more. He kept going in his Skirmerhorn voice. "I've heard that's why Julia Louis Dreyfus hyphenated. Those other Dreyfuses were terrible. Same with Walmart. Those other Marts? Forget about it. Disambiguation is very important." Every time I tried to respond, my words were broken up with giggles. Then Darren and I rounded the corner toward my apartment. He stopped in front of my building. I stopped too. The laughter died in my throat when I saw the way he looked at me. He was going to kiss me. Panic constricted my lungs. I hadn't kissed anyone since you left. I hadn't wanted to kiss anyone since you left. I started, but I didn't quite know where to go with that. Darren must have seen the look on my face, though, and instead of kissing my lips, he leaned forward and kissed my forehead. "Thanks for a really fun night," he said. "I hope we can do it again." I nodded and he smiled. "I'll call you," he said. I could breathe again. "I'd like that," I answered, because I did have a fun night with him, and because it was better to spend time with him than to sit home alone or get trashed with Alexis. And as he walked away, I realized I was disappointed that he was leaving. My world seemed a little brighter while he shared it with me, and I liked that. A lot. Then I turned to walk into my apartment and thought again about you.
29. The next day I spoke to Alexis.
What did you tell Darren about me? I asked her.
Me, she said, nothing.
I sighed. I'd been going over the forehead kiss in my mind all morning, and I realized that someone must have